All right, on today's episode of Brad on Will, we're going to talk about the Rockets finally winning a game, Jalen Green scoring his season high, and Alperen Şengün showing out looking like a true star. Let's dive into it.
All right, and welcome back to another episode of Brad on Will. I'm your first host, as always, Will. You can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Bias Houston over there. We do a lot of the different content aggregation, Rockets basketball takes. We host the post-game spaces. Make sure you guys tap in with those. Can give your thoughts on the games. Quickly shout out Brado and Will on YouTube, Instagram, and Twitter as well. Make sure you guys continue to leave likes, comments, and subscribe. We appreciate the support you've been showing us over there. And with that, I'll pass it off to Brad.
As always, I'm your second host, Brad. You can catch me on Instagram and Twitter at BradoNBA. All your favorite stats, highlights, I got you covered there. And before we pass it to our guest, Jackson, got to say, go Stros. They just got their second championship, so it's good to see that. City was jumping this weekend. The parade was fun, so go Astros. But let's kick it back to these Rockets. And before we do that, we got to kick it to Jackson Gatlin, Mr. Locked On Rockets himself. So, Jackson, it's our first time having you on the show. So how are you doing today, my man?
I am doing fantastic. I'm ready to talk a little Houston Rockets basketball with you guys. I am so happy we get to talk about a Rockets dub. I mean, those are going to be few and far between this season. So the timing could not have been better to be able to make this happen. I know we were talking about maybe recording a few days before this game, and that would have been really disappointing to be talking about a losing streak and all this stuff. Instead, we get to talk about a nice little win. So it's going to be a ton of fun.
Yeah, and with that win, you know, it came with Jalen Green having the second best game of his career scoring wise. So Jackson, we'll start with you first. What were your thoughts on Jalen Green putting up 34 points?
I think it was much needed, right? Like, I mean, Jalen talked about it after the game. He said this was a desperate win for this Houston Rockets team, right? This was a group of guys that last season, you know, the guys that were here last season were a part of that 15-game losing streak. Nobody wanted to have that happen a second time, except for maybe the Wembanyama truthers on Twitter who were, you know, just banging the drum of, you know, wanting to be the worst team for a third year in a row to try to get the best odds at Wemby. But you got to remember, right? Nobody on this Rockets team wants to lose, right? Jalen Green doesn't want to lose. KPJ doesn't want to lose. They want to go out there and compete. They want to play some good basketball. And they've had some games that have come a little close, right? Where they've come up a little bit short, you know, not being able to close things out in the fourth quarter. But against the Orlando Magic, they finally were able to be kind of the aggressors. And a big part of that was Jalen Green and his fantastic 34-point bomb that he dropped, scoring at all three levels, was dancing on the perimeter, getting to a step back, was getting to the mid-range really effectively a couple times throughout the game. Looked really comfortable rather than shooting those, like, kind of crazy off-balance, like, running middies that he gets to sometimes where he's, like, you know, barely coming off the screen and the defender's still on his hip. He got to some mid-range shots that were just, like, wide open, and I love seeing him take those. And then at the rim, he was slicing and dicing through the Orlando Magic defense. He got to the free throw line seven times, hit five of them. Really an all-around fantastic offensive performance from Jalen Green in this game.
I agree. Will, what are your thoughts on his performance?
I think Jackson kind of touched on a lot of it. A lot of it just kind of comes down to him looking a lot more comfortable last night. I think I agree with Jackson. I was somebody who was looking at his mid-range. We talked about this on the last episode, Brad, where it was like 7.7%, I believe, is what he was shooting.
Yeah, 8.7%.
Okay, 8.7%. Yeah. And a lot of it, I see your reaction there, Jack. It was terrible. Lot of it, to me, was it looked like they were forced, and it didn't look like he was comfortable. It looked like what he was trying to do was to get to the rim. And then when he realized that wasn't going to work, I'm going to settle for this mid-range shot. What I saw from him yesterday was this mid-range shot was intentional. That was what I was trying to do when I got the ball and I started, you know, going to throw him. I was trying to get to this spot, to this mid-range shot. So when I see him start looking a lot more decisive and intentional with what he does, I think that's when we start seeing his percentage go up a lot more. I don't know what it's sitting at right now. But I imagine it's probably a lot better than 8.7% because
21.4%.
It's getting
that
back
they went
up
13 points after one game. That is ridiculous.
It was terrible volume. I mean, terrible. Sample size, man. But like, he looked a lot more intentional with his mid-range shot. So I like seeing that from him. He looked like they let the game kind of come to him. It didn't seem like he was forced. We're gonna talk about this a little bit later in the show, but I think Alperen Şengün kind of acting as that offensive hub and letting the offense kind of flow through him enabled Jalen just to get his 34 points within the flow of the offense. And I said this last night in the postgame space on the TL, but it's just going to sound really crazy. But when Jalen Green drops these efficient 30 bombs, it doesn't even like move me anymore. And like, it doesn't shock me. It doesn't like, I'm not like, oh my God, this guy dropped that. Like, I'm like, that's what I expect from him. You know, I expect him to drop 30 points efficiently just anytime he touches the basketball. And it was, I don't want to say it was quiet in the sense of we didn't feel his impact. No, we needed those 30 points, but it was quiet in the sense of you're watching this game. He's getting within the flow of the offense. You look down, you're like, whoa, this guy's 30 points. And you're like, when did he get 30 points? You know, he scores so effortlessly. It's so easy for him. And like I said, it doesn't even shock me anymore. I know this is who Jalen Green is. He's somebody who can get 30 points every single night and it can be efficient every single night. And so when he does it like this, it don't even shock me no more.
Yeah, and I'll say this, you know, Jackson put it perfectly. The mid-range looked good. He went 2 for 2 there, and he was slicing and dicing, getting to the rim. And that led to him making every single one of his shots inside the arc, you know, a perfect 7 for 7, and he had 34 points, you know, the youngest guard to ever do that in NBA history. So Jalen's a special talent when he puts it all together. He struggled this year inside the arc, and he looked really good against Orlando, so that was good to see. And he still hit 5 threes. So true three-level scoring talent Jalen Green is. So it's great to see him get to his spots. And another play that I liked a lot was a backdoor cut when Usman Garuba had the ball. Jalen Suggs got caught sleeping and Jalen had the nice slam. Just a true superstar performance from Jalen Green. So that's great to see. It's all about consistency with him. So that's what I'm looking forward to seeing in this next game against Toronto on Wednesday. But as Will mentioned, you know, Şengün has been the offensive hub. And a few quick things I wanted to touch on before I pass it to Jackson. This last game, you know, Şengün had 68 touches, which was his season high. And against Orlando, he had 72 touches, which is, of course, his new season high. So now that they're running through him a lot more, you can see how much better this Rockets offense is looking. And Şengün is producing with these touches as well. This past game against Orlando, 20 points, 10 free throw attempts, which is absurd for LP getting all these free throw attempts. He's always been capable of doing that. And now he's hitting his free throws. I think he's above 75% on the season. So LP, he's dominant in the post, one of the best points per possession down there right now. And the facilitation is going to go up and up the more touches he gets because he's a capable passer and facilitator. So it's just been great to see him get to work and they're utilizing him as the hub, which is what we've been preaching since that first preseason game against San Antonio. So it's good to see. Jackson, man, what are your thoughts on Şengün looking like a baby Jokic out there?
Well, first off, Brad, you can't mention his ability to get to the free throw line and not tee us up with the free throw rate stat. Come on, you're slacking over there, man.
Oh, you're right. You know what? His free throw rate before yesterday was 51.4, and I did have a stat on it, but that's like he's putting up 17 with that free throw rate. He's one of the 6 players in the league to do that right now. So
I knew you had the stat laying around. I already know Brad News comes prepared. Yep. Nah. So look, I love what we're seeing out of Alperen Şengün, and I love this adjustment, right, where I think the adjustment has come a little too late, unfortunately. Like, it's, you know, I don't know why it took, you know, 8 games into the season for us to finally see the Rockets really make that noticeable shift to running more actions for him and running through him a lot more offensively. Obviously, we had the whole beginning part of the season, the idea of, okay, well, they'll bring LP off the bench, they'll start Bruno Fernando. I agreed with that idea in principle, just based on the idea that, okay, if you're not willing to sacrifice some of the touches from Jalen and KPJ in the starting lineup to get LP the touches and to get him the involvement that he deserves in the offense, then yeah, bring him off the bench, right? That's the best way to accommodate both sides. But I think what we're seeing now is there's just not enough consistency out of the guard play to this point between Jalen and KPJ to where you can rely on both of those guys to consistently put up 20 plus on good efficiency every single night to where you can justify not playing LP alongside them. And so now we're seeing this version of the team where they are still playing heavily through LP, but they're also doing it in conjunction with the good guard play. And I think this game against the Magic was probably the best we've seen those three guys all play together. Jalen kind of being the tip of the spear with his 34 points, LP being that secondary, you know, force with the 20 and 10, and then KPJ kind of being that tertiary guy where he had his 17 points kind of quietly, you know, he was pressing a little bit at times, but, you know, more or less, you know, getting his shots within the flow of the offense, maybe forcing a little bit from beyond the arc. There was a little bit of your turn, my turn going on in the game, but then had the wheeling and dealing in the fourth quarter that was fantastic to see, a big part of the push against the Orlando Magic as they were trying to make their comeback. But for LP, I think a big part of it is just his confidence level is like renewed, right? Where early in the season, it felt like, okay, well, he's coming off the bench. He's in the game. All right. He's not really facilitating much because he's trying to get his, right? Trying to get his touches, trying to get his buckets. Whereas now we're seeing the version of Alpi that we saw last year, right? Where he's facilitating. He's got these wild touch passes to like KJ Martin and stuff. He's, you know, kicking it out to open, open 3-point shooters. And he's being able to play his game, but also flourishing as a screener, as a roller, pretty much wherever he's at in the Rockets offense, he's looked really solid because he's got his confidence back. And that's been great to see.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. Will, what are your thoughts?
Yeah, I'm going to beat Brad Muse to a stat. Alfred Shingun is a starter this season. He started 6 games. That was somebody who I think we touched on the podcast a little bit. I went to see him start. I was kind of shocked and surprised to see him coming off the bench. That's not how I would have done it. I think what Jackson was talking about too was kind of what they were thinking of, as in like they wanted KPJ and Jalen to kind of have run more of the show, have a traditional like pick and roll live threat, someone who protects the rim a little bit more. And then, you know, that's not Shingun, and they didn't really run through him, so they wanted to bring him off the bench to let him run his actual game. And I was always someone, so I think that there's like a way you find the balance between letting Shingun run his game and letting KPJ and Jalen do their thing as well. I think it can work in cohesion. But as a starter this season, he's averaging 17.8 points per game, 9.8 rebounds, 2.8 assists. Brad, he's taken 35 free throws in 6 games, and he's nailed them 85.7% from free throw line. So really good, like really good numbers from Alperen Shingun as a starter. And like you guys have been saying, I think the shift in why our offense has gone from looking unwatchable at times to like, okay, it's pretty sound. I mean, we're not going to knock down as many threes as we did last night every single night at that clip, but like it looks from a viewer standpoint, it looks a whole lot better now. And I think you have to credit a lot of that with Alperen Shingun. I think the guards are learning to be a little bit more willing passers and reading the floor a little bit better. But it also helps when you have somebody, you know, in the post who you throw the ball to him every single time. It's either a bucket or you have to double team him because he's either going to foul at your opposing center or he's going to shoot over him and he's going to make it. And when you have someone who's constantly making that many mismatches like Shingun does, and he's a willing passer like Shingun is, like the difference between him and maybe like a, the more traditional, like physically imposing center down low is Shingun is a willing and high IQ passer. And so what he's doing is he's reading the defense. And when that defense collapses or starts showing a little bit of attention to him, because he's drawing so much attention in the paint, he's finding the open guy. And then that open guy either has an open look or he has someone who he can pass the ball to, then has an open look. Right. And so I think he had yesterday, I should have this pulled up yesterday. He had, 4 assists, and I bet you I know he had way more potential assists. And if you were to factor in hockey assists, it's even higher than that. So like, I love what I'm seeing from him as far as the offense and how he's been able to like I said, get the ball out to an open shooter after causing a mismatch. The guys from there just making the right reads to get the ball to the open man, cutting, moving off ball. Like it's been looking really good. And I think a lot of that has to do with the Rockets finally kind of playing through Alperen Shingun. I'm with Jackson too. I kind of wonder, that's one of the reasons why it does make me scratch my head sometimes with the decision-making. I wonder why it takes us so long to like, figure out these things, because I think that a lot of us coming into the season could have told you that the offense would look a lot better if Shingun was at least, not saying running through him all the time, but at least getting a healthy number of post-up touches. I think all of us would say that that would probably be the best version of our offense. So I'm glad that they're finally doing it, better late than never. I'm glad they're finally doing it.
First off, I'm going to start calling you Will Muse now. And now Jackson Muse is going to chime in. Shingun had 3 hockey assists in the game. So 4, direct assists, 3 hockey assists. And then he had 6 potential assists against the Magic as well.
But now we got to cut it back to Brad Muse, because I was going to say that stat, Jackson, but I got another one just in case you had said that. So Shingun, as a, not even as a starter, for the entire season, he's averaging 17.1 points, 9.8 rebounds, 2.2 assists on an insanely efficient 64.5 true shooting percentage. So if he does that the entire year, if he gets those rebounds up to 10, he'll be the 5th player in NBA history to do that, joining 3 MVPs, Nikola Jokic, Charles Barkley, and off the top of my head, I was going to try to freestyle this, but and Kat, it was the other guy. I'll look up the other guy later. But joining elite company, so Shingun, that's how good he's been as a starter this year and as a player for the Houston Rockets. But Will, for our next conversation, we've been talking about KPJ. Now, he played a little better yesterday. He had a lot of touches, 99 per perspective. The most per game is Tyrese Haliburton with 100 touches per game. So KPJ had 99 yesterday, And that led to him having 11 assists, his season high, and 18 potential assists, an absurdly high number, which is very promising to see. But he did have 7 turnovers. But Jackson, man, what were your thoughts on his game yesterday?
You know, KPJ and to, you know, not even to a lesser extent, KPJ and Jalen have both had up and down seasons, right? They both had some, you know, some really, really high highs, and they both had some really bad lows with just some really inefficient nights. I think that the stretch from the moment KPJ checked back in the fourth quarter to probably about 3 or 4 minutes left in the game, because he had a couple turnovers late in the fourth quarter that were like really kind of head scratchers, some bad decision making, but him spearheading the answer to the Magic run, right? Magic cut the game down to a 3-point game after the Rockets go up as many as I think is like 15, 17, something like that, into the third quarter. Magic start their run, and KPJ, Jalen check back into the game. KPJ had a hand in facilitating every single bucket for the next 14 straight points that the Rockets scored. And seeing that happen, and see, or I apologize, 12 straight points by the Rockets. And then Jalen had a couple buckets. He had the backdoor cut from with the pass from Usman Garuba that we mentioned earlier. He also had a, you know, mid-range floater that he hit. But KPJ,
and I
want to
say
that
KPJ
stretch,
got an assist on that one too. Mm-hmm. That the photo you're talking about, I want to say KPJ assisted that one as well.
He wasn't credited with an assist. He might have had the pass leading into like the drive, but it was like a So I don't know what the threshold is on like how many seconds you have to get the shot up before you get the assist. But at least as far as NBA.com goes, it just showed Jalen and it didn't have, you know, KPJ with the assist credit. But
yeah, just, Jackson, really quick, I will say this.
Sure.
He did not get the assist there. I know exactly what player you're talking about, but he did not get the assist.
So, I mean, I just think that his performance right in that fourth quarter is one of those where you're just like, that's when you're seeing KPJ kind of at his peak, right? He was decisive. He was making quick decisions. He was getting the Rockets into their offensive sets very, very fast. He wasn't wasting any time on the shot clock, and he was attacking the defense with purpose, right? He wasn't kind of, you know, I don't know, waffling about, right? Where sometimes he starts, you know, they start the action, there's nothing there, and then you look up and you've wasted 10, 12 seconds off the shot clock, and then it just devolves into, okay, KPJ's going to try to get to one of his, you know, boom, boom, hezzy, step back, like, moves, or same thing for Jalen, right? Where that happens so often late in the shot clock by the Rockets. But in that stretch, it felt like everything he was doing had a purpose, right? It felt like every screen that he called for had a reason that he was calling for it. It felt like every time he drove to the rim, he was making something happen, either for the roll man or kicking the pass out to an open shooter or just collapsing the defense and then getting the defense in rotation to where they could swing it to the open man. That is the version of KPJ that, again, I'm kind of, and I've been saying this for a while, I'm like out on the idea, the experiment of KPJ as a point guard, just because you know, and I don't think that's a bad thing. Like, KPJ's skill set, he's just not a point guard. That's okay. It's totally fine. He's a great secondary facilitator, and he's a great secondary facilitator who's been tasked with becoming a primary facilitator. And in a way, I think that's kind of unfair to him, and it's put some unfair expectations on his shoulders. And there's not exactly like a, you know, super tried and true system here that he's running. A lot of it's just very much read and react, and that's really tough for a young team to, you know, deal with so much read and react offense. But in that stretch of play, I think it was the best that I've seen KPJ play this entire season, as far as some of his decision-making, his driving, the reads that he was making. And in that stretch, my favorite read that he had was this kickout pass. Will, I think you were freaking out about it on Twitter, and like all of us were, was when KPJ drove it in from the left wing, jumped up and wrapped a pass around 3 Magic defenders. They all kind of like collapsed on him at the paint, and he wrapped this pass around. It looked like it was going to go to the corner at first. Yeah. And he even basically faked out one of the Magic defenders, because even the defender like jumped towards the corner man because he thought that's where the pass was going to go. And KPJ wound up whipping it all the way back out to the opposite wing to Tari Eason for, I think that was Tari's 2nd 3-pointer in that stretch during that Rockets, you know, run where they boosted the lead back up to like 15. So that was such an insane dime. I lost it watching him make that pass. If he could do that on the regular, then yeah, I point guard or not, that's just some elite level playmaking.
Yeah, no, I definitely agree. I wanted to touch on that because that was the first pass I was going to talk about. And, you know, if you watch his game back, again, I said he had 11 assists. A lot of those were to 3-point shooters, but for some of them, you know, he had nice penetration, kick out. The first one to Tari, he penetrated, kicked it back out, and found Tari. Tari knocked down the 3, had a lot of passes to KJ for 3, and had a nice pick and roll with Şengün. Faked out the defender, act like he was going to throw a lob, and threw a nice little scoop pass that led to an LP and 1. So his game, he did have 7 turnovers, had some plays on the stretch, but, you know, definitely some head scratchers. But you know, he played 38 minutes and had 99 touches. So again, that's a lot of touches for a young guy who's a secondary playmaker at heart, and he's still trying to be a primary playmaker. So I do think he had a really good game facilitation wise, and I was very impressed by the assists and reads that he was making, and specifically the pass that Jackson just described thoroughly. But go ahead, Will.
Yeah, I'll start by saying, as someone who has like been pretty vocal about, I think KBJ is a point guard, I agree with what Jackson said. I maintain that even though I think he is a point guard, he's not a primary initiator. I don't think anybody thinks he is. I think he's somebody who's more of a secondary, like Jackson said. That's one of the reasons why I was so high on like Paolo Banchero coming into the draft. So I thought that he was somebody who could be the point guard of the team. And then that would allow KBJ to be more of a secondary to that primary. So yeah, I agree with that sentence as well. And I'll start with the negatives, which was his turnovers. He had a bunch of just silly, stupid turnovers like in the game. There was like a possession where he like traveled in the backcourt. There was like a possession where he got across half court, they double team and he lost the ball. They got like, it was just some stupid, silly turnovers. He's got to clean up. He has to be held accountable for as well. But like you guys said, like, I think this was probably his best playmaking game for sure this season. And I said, this might've been like the best I've seen him as a point guard, since that Sacramento game, which was the triple double last season. Like, this was as good as it gets from KPJ. And so I want to highlight that stretch that you were talking about, Jackson. I think that was the stretch everybody was in love with. He checked in at the end of a 17-3 run by Orlando. Like, I thought we hit the game sealed away. I thought that was it. I thought we were going to, like, you know, just cruise to the end of the game. I want to say we were up by like 20 points at one point. I was like, okay, we're just going to, like, you know, keep this lead. We're going to maintain to the end. And then they put in, I guess we would call the tank lineup, which was the Dacian Nix, Garrison Matthews, that lineup that we don't need to see ever again. they put that in, and the Magic kind of cut the lead back down.
Hey, so some people are calling that lineup the Wimby Five, which I think is hilarious.
I mean, I like that. It reminds me a lot of, this guy's not here anymore, but like the David Nwaba, Jay Sean Tate. I forget, it was some like five in lineup. It was Garuba was in it. It was some lineup we ran like late last season.
Jacob and KJ, I want to say.
No shooters at all. It was you couldn't tell me we weren't trying to lose games when we put that lineup in. But yeah, but like the Dacian Nix, Garrison Matthews lineup, I don't think we should see that ever again. And so as a product of like all of our, you know, I'm honest, like KJ, as a product of that lineup being out there, they cut the lead back down and it was like, oh, well, maybe we might lose this one. And so at the 9 minute and 30 second mark, the game is 103-100 in favor of the Houston Rockets. And from that moment forward, KPJ assists, like Jackson said, on four straight three pointers for the Houston Rockets. The first one, It was three straight three pointers. And then he had a and one pass to Şengün. So it was pick and roll with Şengün, dropped it off to him. Şengün gets the foul and one. Next play, it was come down the court. Dacian Nix was kind of was trailing the play. They left him open. KPJ hit him. Nix nailed the shot. There goes six. Next play, there was the pass where he I'm getting confused here, but I want to say this is the one where Tari drove in a little bit, kicked it to KBJ in the corner. Tari relocated. KBJ drove in a little bit, passed it to Tari open, three. There goes nine. Then he had another really nice pass. I think this was kind of underrated. The one where he drove in a little bit, saw KJ wide open in the corner, found KJ. KJ nailed it. That's 12. And then this was not a part of that 12-0 run, but as Jackson touched on, I think that pass that he threw to Tari Eason, where he drove on the left wing, kind of drew some like three defenders in the paint. I'm with you, Jackson. I thought the pass was going to go to the corner. I thought that he was going to find the corner shooter, and I was completely misdirected when it found its way to Tari Eason. I've never seen a throw a pass like that ever. And like that's an elite read, man. Like to joke, like point guard stuff aside, that is a very elite. That's some Chris Paul. You know, I can't really quantify how good of a read that is for an Omega. That might be like outside of that really nice pass he had to Jabari in preseason against the Spurs, where he kind of whipped it from one end of the court to the other in the court. That might be KPJ's best pass of his career, man. Like that was really crazy to me. And it was right on target. Tari Eason, thank you so much for nailing it, because that would have like sold the highlight completely if you didn't. But yeah, like that's, you know, so that was great. So I love what I saw from KPJ yesterday. He seemed a lot more intentional with moving the ball. There wasn't a lot. There was some ISO, some meet my turn, your turn, but it seemed like more than we've seen in the past. He was a willing, like, let me just, I'm gonna get the team to the set. I'm gonna get off the ball. I'm not gonna sit here and tween hazy the whole possession. And then when I don't get nowhere, I'm gonna kick it to the open shooter. Maybe he'll make it. I saw a lot of like, I'm gonna give the ball up right here, right now. I'm just gonna give it up, relocate, and we're gonna move. We're gonna bring a good shot here. And so I was really impressed with KVA's performance last night. I want to see him do that more consistently. He was two rebounds shy of a triple double, and I think it was rather efficient as well. So yeah, minus the turnovers at the very end, like those I think he had like three or four turns in like the last 3 minutes that were really, really awful. Outside of that, I think he had like a really good game for KPJ standards.
Yeah, I definitely agree. And I want to say another, you know, storyline going into the game was you have your, you know, Jabari Smith Jr. against Paolo Banchero for the first time in an NBA setting. And Banchero went out there and he looked like a star. I mean, 30 points, 6 rebounds, 4 assists, 2 steals, 14 free throws. And we have Jabari Smith, who had 4 points, 1 rebound, and 1 assist, only played 21 minutes. And he's had a slow start. And I will touch on why I'm not too worried about it. I'd hope he started a little better, of course, as we all do. But I want to hear what our guy Jackson Gatlin thinks about Jabari's struggle so far this year.
Look, the Jabari situation's, you know, first off, it just sucks, right? Because he's the third overall pick, and you're watching Paolo ball out for the Magic, so you're getting a little bit of FOMO from that, from, you know, any of the Rockets fans who were on the Banchero bus, and, you know, they're maybe feeling a little bit vindicated because they're like, look, we told you Banchero was the guy. He's him, like all that, right? I'm not worried about, like, Jabari long-term. One, because we just saw this happen last year, right? We saw Jalen Green struggle right out the gate, and then we saw him turn it on at the end of last season, and we saw how fantastic that looked, and now we're getting even more glimpses at, you know, future superstardom out of Jalen Green. Now, that's not to say we're going to see, you know, Jabari Smith Jr. start, you know, dropping 30 burgers every other game or have a 7-game stretch to end the season dropping 30 points, but it's common for rookies to struggle out of the gate. And it's unfortunate that Jabari is struggling out of the gate because the number one skill that we thought was going to translate right away to the NBA was going to be his shooting, right? Obviously, there's a bit of an understanding that, you know, NBA, you know, bodies, guys are bigger, stronger, tougher, whatever. Even though Jabari had a lot of, you know, a good defensive acumen coming out of college, he was probably going to struggle to translate right away to the NBA game, the physicality of it, the speed, some of that stuff. But the shooting was supposed to translate. And that's the issue, is the shooting hasn't translated so far. So he's looked really, really bad. I think a big part of what's kind of happened is in the early part of the season, the first handful of games or so, Jabari was pressing a little bit, right? He was trying to do things that weren't necessarily in his bag, driving to the rim, trying to, you know, dribble pull-ups, you know, elevating and trying to finish through contact at the cup, stuff like that, that I appreciated the willingness to want to try and step out of his comfort zone and try to do certain things, you know, attacking off the catch and, you know, when defenders are running him off the three-point line, stuff like that. Sure. But the issue was, is he then, you know, started missing a lot of those opportunities, wasn't converting at a high rate. And then he also wasn't converting the open looks that he was getting. And so then I think it became a confidence thing where it's like, all right, he's getting all these opportunities. He's not converting any of them. So now his confidence is shot. So now his teammates are a little bit less confident in him. The coaching staff's probably a little bit less confident in him. So then it all just keeps feeding back into itself to where now you're seeing a game where, yeah, he's, you know, he came back off of, you know, being out due to illness. He missed like a week with, you know, flu-like symptoms. And, you know, he definitely looked like he was rusty, looked like he had been bedridden and, you know, not in tip-top shape. But even not making excuses for him or anything, he still looked, you know, lost at times out there on the floor. You know, only got 4 shots up in this game. And so now I think it's to a point where there's no really, like, he doesn't really have a leg to stand on to say, well, the coaching staff should be drawing plays up for him. No, he's not even hitting the open shots that he's getting. So it's kind of one of those tough things where I think Jabari just needs to take a step back, take a deep breath, and get back to what he's good at, right? He needs to be able to hit the open shots that he's getting within the flow of the Rockets offense. And on top of that, the coaching staff does need to do a better job once he's kind of out of whatever this shooting rut is to actually get him the ball in some spots where he can be successful, right? I don't know why it took 7 or 8 games in before we saw Jabari get touches from the elbow where he could, you know, elevate straight, you know, get the ball at the elbow, triple threat, and decide if he's going to elevate, take a 1 dribble pull up, whatever, maybe pass out of the elbow, stuff like that. Things that he did consistently at Auburn that he hasn't really been afforded the opportunity to do within the Rockets offense. So I think it's not nearly as black and white as some people try to make it seem. It's not, you know, just boom or bust. There's a lot of gray area. There's a lot of nuance as to why Jabari is currently struggling. But if Jabari were making even like league average percentage of his shots from long distance, we wouldn't be having this discussion right now. We'd be totally fine because defensively he's had some moments where he's looked good. He's also had moments defensively where he looks lost, right? Where he's not boxing out, where he, you know, doesn't rotate properly, all that stuff. So I think it's just, he's just adjusting, right? And it's been a little bit slow going, but he's going to pick it up sooner rather than later.
Yeah. I'll say this really quickly. Jabari is the eighth youngest player in the NBA, so I'm not tripping about him, you know, being inefficient right now. The defense, you know, we all thought it was going to be really good coming in, but it is an adjustment, you know, going against NBA bodies, as Jackson said. Right now, they do have to utilize him in a way for him to succeed. But first, he has to knock down his open shots. He was a generational shooter at Auburn, and that was supposed to translate. So once he starts knocking down those open threes, he's taken six a game, so the confidence is there. Maybe not as much in these past few games, but at the end of the day, he's taking six threes a game. He's only hitting 30% right now. Those are going to start falling eventually. I'm very confident they will. Jabari is a confident kid. He's just really young, and it's going to take some time. You know, you have to learn from what we just saw with Jalen Green last year, as Jackson touched on again. He made a lot of great points. So just be patient with this kid. The defense will come. The shot will come. Get him his touches on the elbows. He can rise up, get some buckets there. It's ugly right now, and you just have to remember to stay patient with the young kids in the NBA. Again, he's 19, eighth youngest player in the NBA. If anything, you want to start judging him, wait until next season, maybe midway through. That's a good timetable for him. But I'm not worried about Jabari. I'd like to see it translate sooner, but it's not the end of the world, 100% not. What do you think, Will?
I want to start by being the vindicated person that Jackson was talking about. I was right. Paolo is him, bro. Paolo is a beast. He's a lot better than I think I imagined he was going to be coming into the NBA, even though as someone who was pretty high on him. He's
2-9, empty stats. No, yeah. I'm kidding.
No, I feel you. No, I was going to say, man, but I'm thinking long and hard about this. But between the last two drafts, I think coming out of the gate, he's looked like the best player out of, you know.
I agree.
Just starting their careers, he's come out the gate a whole lot better than I think everybody imagined. And the part that I was so high on him was his playmaking. And, like, that part of his game is real, man. Like, if you're watching him play, the way he was reading the defense against us last night, man, that part of his game is 100% real. And, you know, like I said, I'm not going to gush over him too much, but I was right. But as far as Jabari, one, I think that, like everybody's been saying, if you were looking at this, is I think he missed one game this season, or is it two he's missed this season?
He missed the one with the illness, I want to say. Jackson,
so, am I wrong? So it was 10 games he's played this year, right? I want to say he's played 10 games.
I'll double check.
Yeah. I mean, it's no more than two. I know that much. So if it's either one or two. But he's played, I want to say, around 10 games in his rookie season.
Yeah, 10.
That's what I thought it was. Okay, so if you're having, like, I don't want to say buyer's remorse, but, like, if you're looking at Jabari 10 games into his rookie season and saying, oh, we should have got this guy, or this guy is, you know, Jabari isn't the guy we should have drafted, I'm going to say that I don't ever portray myself as somebody who's, like, the almighty knower of ball. I still have a lot to learn. But if you're judging a rookie 11 games into the rookie season, you don't know basketball. Like, there's no other way to phrase it. You don't know what you're talking about. If you're looking at a guy this soon into their career and saying, okay, because he's not producing at this level this soon, you know, you're drawing these long-term conclusions about him. No, that's not a large enough sample size for a young player to determine their outlook long-term. That being said, I do think he's struggling. I think it's fair to say that, like, even though I'm not concerned about him long-term and I think that he's going to be fine, he's struggling. He's not playing at the level that even when you adjust expectations for a young rookie coming into the NBA, who's someone who, like Jackson said, was going to come in and just knock down open looks and play some solid defense. I think even if you adjust those expectations for that, he's been playing pretty bad. Like, there are times where he has an open look and he just misses. Like, I'm glad you said that, Jackson, because I think it's one thing people are saying on Twitter I kind of disagree with. I think we should be running more plays for Jabari. Like, the fact that we haven't been spamming pick and pop with him, I think is a travesty, because I feel like that's a very easy way to just create an open look for a guy who's a good shooter. But even though we haven't been running the best of plays, and to be fair, like, we don't run plays on the Houston Rockets at all, but like, even though we haven't been doing that, there are times where the dude has an open look, wide open, naked open, and doesn't make it. And, like, that, to me, that's not like you can say, well, if he drew up a play from him, he would have made that shot. Not make your open look, you know? And I talked about this on the podcast before, but, like, there was possessions against the Suns where he had Chris Paul and him in the post and couldn't score. And, like, that's not if we ran more post-ups for him, he would have made. Nah, man, like, it's you have 8 inches over Chris, 8-9 inches in height over Chris Paul. Like, turn around and make the shot, you know? That's not a – to me, that's not a if he got more touches, he would start making his shots. Is he playing? You know, were there times where he was like forcing shots because he's out of the flow of the offense? Yeah. But there were also times where, like I said, where he's just good and good scoring opportunity, and he's either not taking the shot because, like, you can see his confidence is kind of shot right now. It's not where it once was. Or if he's taking it, he's kind of hesitating. He's missing. And I think we have to get Jabari back to the point where, you know, because we haven't seen him do any of the patented, like, dribbling to a pull-up shot. And I'm not saying he should be either, you know, tween as he crossing into, like, you know, jump shots. But, like, in transition, you know what I'm saying? Like, there are times where he should just, you know, get the ball, trail on the play, one dribble, pull up, pull it. You know what I'm saying? And he's a guy who's capable of making that. You really can't contest his jump shot. His release point is so high, and we don't really see him doing that anymore. So I think for him, it's just the confidence thing. And just seeing him still kind of adjusting to the NBA level, I'm not concerned at all. When you look at what he's projected to be at the NBA, when you draft him, we're talking about a guy who was going to come in and one day be probably the best wing or 3-and-D wing in the entire NBA. Like, he's going to be up there. Someone who can knock down threes at elite level, brought most positions at elite level. Nothing I've seen from him so far suggests he won't be able to do that when he figures it out. So I'm not concerned. And then for the people who were out there saying, well, yeah, he's doing this, he's not doing that. When I ask, did you watch him in college for you to be surprised that he's not out here twin as he crossing, you know, running the offense? I don't think you watched him if you're surprised he's not doing that. But then two, I've said this a couple of times now, people need to go look at the type of players who are drafted in the top three, top five, historically speaking. It's not always Jason Tatum and Trae Young and Luka. Like, go look at some of the guys who are drafted top five in like the last decade or so. And you'll be surprised at how many of those guys, you know, with 2020 hindsight, are not they're not superstars, or they're just role players. They're not in the NBA anymore. Like Jahlil Okafor was somebody, you know, just 7 years ago, I believe. 7 years ago, we were talking about Jahlil Okafor in the same light we're talking about Karl-Anthony Towns. And he started, like, unlike Jabari, Jahlil Okafor started his career, like, really well. I want to say he was averaging, like, 17-7 his rookie season. And here we are, and he's not in the – he was never a superstar. He was more of a role player, and here we are 7 years later. He's not in the NBA anymore. And that was a guy who was a consensus top three pick. He was, no questions asked, one of the best players in that draft. And here we are, you know, 7 years later, he's not in the NBA anymore. And there's a lot of guys like Jahlil Okafor who – aren't in the NBA anymore, or, you know, came in with a lot of expectations on their shoulders and are not, you know, they're not superstars, they're just quality players. And I think that low-end outcome for Jabari Smith is a really good basketball player. Like, I think that you talk about someone who's 6'11", can knock down threes, guard multiple positions, that's a really good basketball player. So if he doesn't become Jason Tatum or, you know, Trae Young, Luka, guys who came in and immediately day one, top five picks who were, you know, impactful superstars from day one, that's not a bad thing, because go look at guys who are at the top five. It's not always the superstars. So that's just my thoughts on Jabari. Let's kind of pump the brakes. It's no reason to start getting concerned 11 games into his career.
Yeah, I agree. On the bright side, though, someone who hasn't been struggling is KJ Martin, and he had probably his best game of the season yesterday. 21 points, 4 rebounds, had 5 assists. It's close to his career high of 7 way back in 2021, and he had 2 blocks and a highlight block, that probably the block of the season. So, Jackson, man, what were your thoughts on KJ's performance?
KJ's been the best storyline of this Rocket season so far, just because when you consider how things looked in the offseason, to where, you know, his future was a little uncertain, a little murky. You know, was he going to stay? Was he going to be? There were a lot of conversations where people were talking about, all right, well, you know, trade request is in, get him out of here, right? Let's use him as tie him to EG as the sweetener, and let's get EG jettisoned out of Houston, all that kind of stuff. To see him kind of go from the conversations being that to understanding that he is, you know, happy with this new role. He's bought into what the Rockets are trying to put together. He, you know, is open to, you know, being with this organization long-term, and then seeing his on the court growth, right? KJ has grown a lot in the 2 years that he's been with the Rockets, to go from being a really, really raw, really, really raw young player at 52nd, you know, overall pick, to being able to be a guy that produces at the level that he does when given adequate number of minutes is amazing, right? He's able to go out there, and he's basically grown himself and you know, kind of molded his skill set into exactly the kind of three that you want in today's modern NBA. He's 6'7", good size, can jump out of the gym, has gotten to become a significantly better on-ball defender. He's got good off-ball defensive chops, because he's got the ability to, like, rotate over from the weak side and pin somebody's shot right up against the glass, as we saw in the game against the Orlando Magic. And then offensively, his skill set has become so well-rounded to where his three-point shooting is considerably better, to the point where I think in games this season where he's shooting more than four attempts, he's averaging 37.5%. So there's a stat for you, Brad. It's a good stat. And on top of that, just his overall ability to handle the basketball has gotten better. There are still some funny moments where he'll like bring the ball up like in transition, and he's like carrying the hell out of it because he still doesn't have the best handles. Needs to.
Hey, Jackson, you know, really quickly, I want to say the one time I was on Lockdown Rockets, we talked about KJ Martin, how when he got the ball and he drive, it was a straight line drives, maybe some zigzags in there. But he is getting a little better handle.
He has gotten better, right? He's invested some VC into his handles for sure. But I think the difference is, right, is we get caught up in like guys who have like the flashy handles, right? Like CP3 ball on a string, or like Kyrie Irving, whatever, guys who can manipulate the basketball in these crazy flashy ways. You don't need that. You just need an effective handle, right? You just need to be able to put the ball on the floor, take a couple strong dribbles to the rim. And especially if you're KJ Martin, right? Couple strong dribbles to the rim, and then he can just elevate, and he's either going to get a layup, or he can get to that kind of like finger roll, teardrop floater thing that he's gotten in his bag now, that kind of stuff. So it's been great to see him get better at attacking off the catch is kind of a big part of his game, because that continues to unlock other things, because so much of it is all tied into each other, right? Like, he's a better shooter now, so defenses have to close out and they have to honor him on the perimeter. When they do close out, now he's got the willingness and the ability to put the ball on the floor and drive it in. He's become a better finisher in and around the rim. And then even then, if the defense rotates over, his passing chops are on display now, to where he's got the ability, and he's been making these reads, whether he drives in from like the strong side, you know, wing or baseline, and then he whips it to the opposite corner if the defense rotates over and closes off the driving lane. So all in all, I think KJ Martin is growing into and potentially like showcasing himself as maybe the future starting like small forward for this Houston Rockets team. If I had the coach's hat on right now, I would have KJ Martin starting at the three spot for this Houston Rockets team. I mean, he gives you more size than EG. He's giving you consistent shooting on decent volume. Like, I can't think of any reason why you wouldn't want to have KJ Martin at some point in the starting lineup.
I mean, you're preaching to me now, because I think I'm someone who I've wanted to see KJ Martin. I mean, not KJ Martin, Eric Gordon, either get relegated to a bench role, or just better yet, find himself on a contender. I think his time in Houston has run its course. But yeah, if it was up to me, I would 100% be starting KJ Martin as soon as like next game. He's someone who, as you kind of touched on, he's the perfect complementary piece to your more established stars. He's a great cutter. He's improving as a shooter. He's able to play defense. I think he's probably a better defender than Eric Gordon at this stage of his career. And then especially as like a weak side help defender. We talk about that play where he kind of just pinned the shot against the glass. I think a play that was maybe not necessarily as polarizing, but pretty impressive in its own light, was there was a play, I believe it was Jalen Suggs at the end of the game last night, where Jalen Suggs was driving on a fast break, and it looked like it was going to be a bucket in transition. This was like in crunch time as well. And KJ Martin perfectly contests the jump shot without fouling him. And to me, like, you can't teach that, man. Like, that's a lot. That's something that KJ Martin has been able to do consistently this season. I'm really happy to see him able to do that. So yeah, I like what I saw from him there. You touched on Jackson. He had 5 assists last night, and those are like 5 quality assists. There were times where he was able to find the open shooter at the short roll. There was a play that stuck out to me a lot where Shingun kind of found him, and you were thinking, okay, he's gonna take this floater. He's booked up to KPJ for a 3. That's someone who's, you know, we touched on a lot as a really good shooter. 48.2% last season, as Brad would talk about. So being able to find KJ Martin, I mean, find KPJ as an open shooter there, I mean, that's great reads. We lost Brad, but that's great reads from KJ. Here we go. We got him back. All right, there we go. We're going to bring Brad back mid show. It's all good. We got KJ Martin. You know what I'm saying? 5 assists a game, man. If you're getting that out of your complimentary role player, that's really good. So I was really impressed with KJ last night. Someone I've been impressed to a lot this season. I will admit when I'm wrong, and I was wrong this offseason when he said he wanted a trade. I was kind of on the side of like, okay, if he wants to leave, let's just grant a trade request. I was wrong. He needs to stay. And I've gone from this guy can be traded to like, let's start him. So yeah, man, I really thought like what I saw from KJ Martin. Jackson, you got anything else you want to touch on with KJ, with the game, anything else where we kind of start wrapping up here?
Well, we had that, you know, that report from The Athletic's Kelly Eco that things are, you know, looking so good with KJ Martin to this point that, you know, even KJ and kind of his camp, whatever, they're even, you know, entertaining the idea of being open to, right, his long-term, you know, spot here in Houston. You know, I think it's very premature to entertain the idea of a KJ Martin extension. You know, there's no reason to, you know, even start. I mean, you can start the discussions with it, right? But I think the silver lining here and the important thing to take away is it's a good sign that KJ is bought into this new identity, right? This new role on the team. And the fact that he's open to the idea of discussing extension and open to the idea of being in Houston long term shows that he accepts and understands his role and sees a vision where he's an important part of this team moving forward. So I think that should be the takeaway from that. Not that they're going to ink a contract extension like in the next week or two. That's not the takeaway. It's just the idea that KJ's happy with his role. His teammates are happy with him here. He's bought into what's going on. And again, I don't think it was ever something as, you know, as direct as like a formal trade request, more so just KJ was uncertain about his role, right? He, you know, they had Jayshon Tate on a brand new contract. You still had Eric Gordon floating around, taking up minutes at the wing. You drafted Jabari and Tari. And so it's understandable that he was confused and wanted some clarity about what his role was moving forward. But this organization is heavily bought in on what he can provide. Clearly he's been producing through these first 10 games of the season. It'll be fantastic to see what else he's got in the tank as the season moves on.
Agree. I mean, like I said, he's somebody who I think that's one of my worst takes yet. It was the let KJ Martin walk in free. I mean, not walking free agent, but if he wants to be traded, let's start trade him. I think he's somebody, as you said, I'm willing to bet he's probably like a team friendly contract that can stay around. His Stone's kind of been masterful in handing out those team friendly contracts between, you know, Jayshon Tate and Kevin Porter Jr. So like if he's willing to come back on another like team friendly deal, lock him up now. He'll be a quality role player for this team for years to come. I'm with it. And so, yeah, that's what I have to say about KJ Martin, about the game last night. I think Brad's had some technical difficulties, so we're gonna wrap it up here. But Jackson, as always, thank you for coming on the show. We really appreciate you taking the time out your day to talk Rockets basketball with us. Not that you need to do this, you're Mr. Hollywood big time, but please tell everybody where they can find you at, so they can tap in with your content.
You call me Mr. Hollywood big time one more time, I'm never coming back to the show ever again, Will. No, always a pleasure to be able to talk hoops with you guys. You could track me down on Twitter at JT Gatlin before Elon Musk runs that platform into the ground. I also do Locked On Rockets 5 days a week, talking Houston Rockets basketball. I'm at every home game. I'll be on some of the road games coming up here in Dallas and in Denver. So that should be a ton of fun. Follow along for all the coverage.
Yeah. And as always, you can find me on Instagram and Twitter at Bias Houston. I'll shout out Brad real quick. Brad, you can find him on Brado NBA, Instagram, Twitter. Shout out Brad on Will on YouTube. Like I said, continue to subscribe, leave your comments. Really appreciate the support on that front. And with that, we'll see you guys next time. Thank you for listening.